everybody. Well, where are we here? All right, everybody. Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get into on the show. Really only one topic today. Lots of guests to come on and talk about it with us. The UBC Thunder men's basketball team making it for the second year in a row all the way to the national championship game, only for the second year in a row to lose that game. It was on Sunday. This year they lost to the Saskatchewan Huskies, a team they beat during the regular season but lost to in the Canada West semifinal game right here at the Ward Gym. UBC beats Lakehead in the first round, Calgary in the second round, but then they cannot beat the Huskies in the championship game. We're going to have at lots of guests today. We're going to have at about 4:40, Vern Knopp, assistant coach from the basketball team. Howard Samura of the province will be with us. Much, much more. But here to start us off, a member of the UBC Thunderbird 2009-10 team. He is a senior on this club. Kyle Watson, who just had an outstanding 3 years here at UBC. But Kyle, I'm sure that lost Sunday in Ottawa was a bit of a tough one, hey?
Yeah, that's for sure. It was definitely a tough one. Going out your last game and losing it is definitely tough, especially when you had such a great team and a great season.
Kyle, let's get into this basketball game, though. You guys got off to a 12-4 start to Saskatchewan. Everything was looking rosy, and then before you know it, they're on something like a, I don't know what it was. It was like a 30-6 run or something like that. And I don't know the exact number, but you guys never got back after that early run. What happened there?
I'm not exactly sure what happened, but, you know, we got off to a good start, which is something that we definitely needed because you never want to get behind at the start of a game in a national final. But then I think, you know, they hit some shots, and their defense wasn't too bad, but, you know, it was transition defense that really killed us. And, you know, we felt that if we got them in the half court and slowed them down a bit, we'd be able to stop them. But it was their guards that have been all year, and they beat us up and down the court there, and we really couldn't get anything going on offense. So
yeah,
that's kind of how it started, I guess.
Yeah, Sherron Glover, leading scorer in the country in the regular season, had 28 points. Michael Linklater, who I thought was the MVP of the tournament, had 20 points for him. But, I mean, Kyle, your offense was fine. I mean, you were able to put up 81 points. A big thorn in your side last year, especially in this championship game, was giving up offensive rebounds. You guys actually got 19. They only got 7. But, I mean, quite frankly, your defense giving up 91 points, that's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what got us to the first two games was our defense. You know, we put up 81 points in the final game there, but, you know, it wasn't our offense that got us through the first two games. You know, and I know a lot of people were talking about how good our defense was the first couple, but I think, you know, defense wins championships, and we didn't have it that night, and communication is a big thing, and I don't know if we had that, finding guys in transition. And literally, I think it was just the transition that killed us. They scored off turnovers, and they also just got the ball out when we scored and just push, and ran our throats.
Kyle, something similar happened to Ross Beckering that happened to you of the Calgary Dinos in their game against you guys, the semifinal loss for Calgary. Their star player got into early foul trouble and really, you know, especially in the first half, he got some minutes in the second half, but Kyle, had to be so disappointing for you. 4 fouls in only 11 minutes of play on the bench for most of the first half. I believe you picked up 2 quick fouls early in the third quarter, didn't you?
Yeah, well, actually, what it was, a lot of people actually didn't know what happened. People watching on TV didn't actually catch it because they didn't really talk about it. But I actually picked up 2 intentional fouls that, and I guess I got kicked out of the game at the start of the third, which was very disheartening because they weren't, you know, you think of an intentional foul, you think it's someone going out to, trying to hurt someone, and both times they're just 2 loose balls, and I went and dove on them, and I got called for intentional fouls, and I was befuddled, and people on the bench, the guys on the team were like, where'd you go? Like, you only have 4. But I guess some people had failed to realize that it was intentional fouls, and I was out of the game before you knew it, and And that really cut me deep. You know, it was my last game, and it was tough that I couldn't, you know, provide the spark for my team and help us push farther. But tough way to go out.
Yeah, Kyle. You know, you're saying they. I just found this out right now. They didn't mention it on the TV. I did notice that they did call it. I saw it because they got the free throws and the ball.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. They never mentioned it once. You were actually thrown out of this ball game, hey, for that.
Yeah, well, I didn't even understand either. I didn't realize at the time. I talked to the refs, and they said I tried to grab a guy's leg, but in a split second, I mean, I'm not thinking about that. I'm trying to grab the ball. And I didn't really know what happened, and then I know when I got subbed off, I knew I had four fouls, so I figured I'd be playing in the fourth, and then I just told Randy I needed to take a walk, so I went to the tunnel just so I could calm myself down a little bit, so I didn't do anything out of control to the rest or anything, but I just walked through the tunnel, and then Vern told me I was gone, so really shocking to me at that time, and it was very difficult, but I wasn't even allowed to sit on the bench, so it really hurt, that's for sure.
You weren't. Which ref was it? The Canada West ref?
Yeah. I mean, there's two guys that did Canada West, and I got one from each.
Really? Hey. Because I don't see. I mean, I asked that. I'd like to know that, and they don't call those. I don't see those fouls called out here often at all.
No. I mean, both coaches. No one really knew what happened. People in the crowd didn't know what happened, and I know comments were made on. Radio and stuff, just people were confused, as well as myself, as well as my teammates, and it was just something I definitely didn't want to leave my career with there, that's for sure.
And it was the Canada West refs, they were the ones, both of them dinged you with one, hey?
Yep.
Okay, well that's all. So you're in the tunnel watching. You couldn't even sit on the bench. Where were you? Just watching from the tunnel? Were you watching on TV?
I guess I wasn't supposed to be in the stadium, but I just put on some street clothes and went up to the far side and just watched my team. And then I sneaked onto the second row, and I was able to cheer on my teammates right from there. So, it was good that I got to be with my teammates there for the last bit.
Oh, that must have been awful, eh, Kyle?
Yeah, it was really tough. I still had so much faith in my team that, you know, I think we could come back from anything at any point. And, you know, we made a couple runs, but they just countered with some big shots down there. And being a senior and trying to be a leader on the court, it's tough to watch. It's just tough to watch when you can't do anything about it. Obviously, it's been said before, but it's tough.
Kyle, this team though, outstanding year for you guys. But it seemed at times you were vulnerable at places. Last year it was very easy to pick out the problem. It was those, you know, giving up those offensive rebounds. This year, very good team, but it seemed that when you were playing the top teams, it seemed like when you're playing the bottom teams or teams that you were much better than, you blew them out. But when you played a better team, it was suddenly very close games. What was the thing with this team, would you say, that sometimes you guys just weren't able to do quite at the level you needed to?
Yeah, I think, something about that is that we still had confidence, though, whether if it was a close team. I mean, when you get up to the top, you know, against the top teams, games are going to be close. And we finished out most of the top games that we played against. And we knew that fourth quarter we were always going to win. And that was something that our team did have from this year, which was great. It's probably carried on with the tradition of UBC just winning. But, you know, I think I couldn't really put my finger on some of the games. I mean, we only lost three. So
yeah.
It's tough to say that. There was something wrong with the team or anything. But, you know, at times I think offensive rebounding was a key factor, and that played was a factor in the two losses that we had. And then the final one, I mean, we did a good job, obviously, on the boards. We out-rebounded them. But it was our defense that kind of caved in for us, which is something that's been good for us all year. So, it's something that happened probably at a bad time, but they're a good team. and you can't take away from that.
Yeah, no, I do have to say Saskatchewan. You know, I saw them in the Canada West watching their games in Nationals. I mean, that team just got hot and just played great at the right time. No question.
Definitely a team with a lot of confidence and peaked at the right time for sure.
Did it seem, do you think, Kyle, that the fact that they had beat you guys here in the Canada West semifinal, did that play over into the national championship game? Did that give them that extra confidence? Or do you think just getting there, beating Carleton, I mean, what do you think?
I think it definitely gave them confidence from them beating us. You know, I think they're a team that always had confidence, but that just gave them kind of just more of a solid, I guess, hard facts for that. And then beating Calgary and then Carleton, you know, they're just running on a big high there. And but, you know, beating us in the semifinals, we had, you know, we were ready to go, and they said some things to us, and, you know, we were pumped. We were ready to go. So obviously gave them confidence, but it didn't take away from us our confidence or anything like that.
Yeah, I will say, against Saskatchewan, I really noticed it in their Canada West Championship game versus Calgary. I didn't notice it so much against you guys, but they like to talk, that team, don't they?
To say the least.
Kyle, you know, you're a senior, obviously. Another guy, what's this team going to be losing this year? Blaine LeBranch, not the best game, shooting the basketball in the championship game, 3-for-11. He was excellent in your win versus Lakehead. What's UBC basketball losing fifth-year shooting guard Blaine LeBranch?
Obviously a pure scorer. He's good. He's a veteran guy as well. He's an older guy. He's the oldest guy on the team. And the passion that he has for basketball and what it meant to him really rubbed off on the team. But just like a really good scorer, just a pure scorer, can light it up whenever. And, you know, it's going to hurt because he's a guy who can put up a lot of numbers. But at the same time, Nathan Yu is developing very much. You saw it at the beginning of the season that he can fill it up, and he can fill it up quick. So I think Nathan Yu is going to cover that role, and they're definitely going to be really good next year. And I think Graham Bass is going to take over as your energy guy and just aggressive guy, and he's going to be a big leader out there vocally on and off the court. So, you know, you got two guys that are older that are leaving, but they're going to be a really good team next year.
Yeah, Nate, another guy just couldn't get his shot to fall in the finals. 0-for-5, 0-for-3 from threes, eh?
Yeah, and you know, Nate's a streaky shooter. When I used to play, when I shot a lot from three, you know, I was a streaky guy, and you know, some games you have it, some games you don't. And Nathan's nickname is Nightmare. You know, on any given night, you might have a dream or you might have a nightmare. And maybe Saskatchewan had the dream, right?
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, another guy who, you know, nationally for sure showed, you know, first-year guy with you guys, but, you know, obviously played with Thompson Rivers before, Kamar Burke. I think you can say he might have just been your guy's best player in that tournament.
Bar none was our best player, and that's someone good because you see this guy in practice, and you see him in games, and you see him all season, and, you know, very up and down, but just very raw talent that, you know, this guy has some potential to just do some big things. And, you know, I think he played well throughout the season. He got some big boards and stuff, but he was an absolute man out there in Nationals. You know, he was so excited to be there. You know, he's never even made playoffs before. And he was out there, and he's being physical, and he was playing what you need to do to win a national championship. And I thought he really brought it. And I think he's at one-tenth of his potential. So he's going to stay here for the summer and stuff. And working with Randy and stuff, he's only going to get a lot better. And I think it's scary to see what that guy can do. And I think he has one of the most upsides probably in Canada.
Yeah, he was just great. And Josh White, very good tournament. My question for you is somebody, you know, who's no longer be on this team next year. Sorry to say it like that, Kyle. But
yeah.
Josh White, I believe at times he should almost stop trying to worry about being a point guard on offense and really take over trying to score the ball. Is that a fair comment I'm making?
Totally fair comment. I think next year, I think they might play Alex and Josh more together. Which is good because Alex had a great tournament. He's a really good point guard, and he's very pass-first mentality. And so you know, if we get Josh coming up on the wing or whatever, coming off ball screens, he's a scorer, you know. He doesn't just pass the ball, which he does well anyways. But, you know, they forced him right a lot, and that kind of affected him. But the guy, no matter what, if he forces you right, he can get to the rim no matter what. And, you know, he's still going to be the go-to guy next year because right. He's that good of a player.
Because I just wonder, Kyle, it's, you know, in your years here, you were here Casey's last year, weren't you?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay, because, you know, so there's Casey Archibald, obviously, you know, the go-to guy, and then Chris Dick was the go-to guy for a couple of years. That seemed to be something different this year. You didn't have that go-to guy. You know, it seemed like it was Josh White, but he wasn't, you know, the guy at the end of the game who was going to shoot the ball for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely yeah. not. I mean, I just wonder if that's something a team does need, is down the stretch, everybody knows this is the guy.
Yes and no. I think the reason why our team was so good this year, a lot of people didn't know what to think coming in this year because we lost Chris. We lost that go-to guy. But, you know, our team is so has so much depth, and everybody can score. I don't think you need that go-to guy in the whole game. I think you need it at certain times of the game. I think you need it, like, that last second shot, and I think Josh has that still. Well, obviously, but I think he can hit a shot no matter what when it comes down to it. But again, next year, I think Blaine, if we had put it in a position, it was either Blaine or Josh, and I think next year it could be, you know, Nate or Josh. I think Nate can show it next year.
So Nathan, that's your guy to watch next year.
That's the guy to watch, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, my question with you, Kyle, with just sort of staying on that is, you know, Nate moves up the depth chart, obviously, and a guy I'm sort of picturing to take over your role there is Melvin Mayotte, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, he had a really good season for you guys. But who are going to be the guys to take their spots as the depth players coming off the bench?
Well, I think, you know, we played 10, 11, 12 guys all year long, and I think, you know, Denny didn't get too much time this year to come in there and show what he's got, but he actually surprised me a lot with how hard he works on defense and denying the wings and stuff. And, you know, you throw Melvin in there, say he was a starter, then, you know, Denny can fill that because he's definitely a really good shooter, which is Melvin, and he plays really good defense. So I think Denny can fill in for Melvin, and then, you know, you got Nate and you got Murph to fill in for Blaine, and I think they'll be fine, you know, and I think they got that big guy coming in, and there's a couple other things that are probably stirring up with Kev as usual. Yeah. Everybody wants to come to UBC, so they'll be fine.
There you go. Kyle, three trips to the National Championship Tournament, two silver medals in your 3 years in that tournament, one Canada West Championship. You hosted two Canada West Championships. That is a pretty good run there, Kyle, in a three-year period.
Yeah, for sure. You know, no regrets. We made this far, and you know, a lot of teams don't even make playoffs, or a lot of guys don't even get to go to nationals. So I'm lucky from where we've got to. You know, we made it to the finals last 2 years. It's further than, you know, most people can say, and most people that have been on a UBC basketball team. So I'm extremely happy about my career. You know, it's one of the best decisions ever made coming to UBC, and no regrets. I've met some great people, and we did well.
There you go. And now you go, what are you doing now? Where are you go now?
Well, I'm headed off to Toronto for training for a marketing position in a marketing firm.
I've been doing that for three years,
and now moving up the ladder a little bit. So headed off on Thursday back to the East Coast, and from there we'll see. I've been talking a lot to the alumni of UBC, and they're extremely successful, and I'd love to pick their brain. So kind of business-oriented.
All right, go join the corporate world, Kyle.
Absolutely.
Kyle Watson. Kyle, a pleasure as always. Thanks for coming on the show today. I saw those plays on TV, and I told you, I just found out about that now. They never mentioned it on the television broadcast, and you got hosed there, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks.
Kyle, thanks a lot. Outstanding career here at UBC.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon, Kyle.
Take care.
All right, that was Kyle Watson, and this has to become a topic for us today is You know, I was not going to be critical of the officiating at all coming in. I actually thought even that UBC got a break in their Canada West semifinal game against Calgary with the way they were making calls on Ross Beckering. I'm sorry, in the semifinal game where they beat Calgary, and I actually thought the officials made a really bad call on Ross Beckering on a play that, I don't know. He got a couple early fouls. He had to sit on the bench for the first half. UBC put up a lead. Calgary couldn't come back. I thought that UBC got the benefit there. But to find out that Kyle Watson, I mean, I remember watching those plays on TV, and you saw the fact that Calgary was taking free throws and then getting the ball on these sort of half court, diving for the ball on his own end. I'm thinking, wow, that, you know, okay, that was weird. And you just move on with the game, I guess. And I wanted to be there. They didn't send me. That sucked. Anyways, next thing I know, they're shooting the free throws. And you see Kyle, he's got the four fouls. What I thought had happened there when Kyle got those two quick fouls in the third quarter, one I guess was called a breakaway, I thought he was out of the game because he was in foul trouble, and then they didn't put him back in because they needed more of the pure scorer. Kyle's sort of like an energy guy. He can score, but, you know, maybe they just wanted Brett Mallett. I don't know, right? It was just, maybe it was a coach's decision. But to find out that he was actually ejected from that game, that's very distasteful of those officials. And, you know, the Canada West, a horrible season by the guys running this league in basketball. The new schedule was a total joke. This is a league that's crumbling. You're going to have these smaller colleges come in a couple years, and those refs, I mean, to kick a guy out, senior like that, on such a, I'm shocked. I just found out about this right now. So we're going to get into this more with Vern Knopp right after the break. I just found out, I cannot believe, and those officials should be ashamed of themselves. Garbage year for Canada West, the people running this league. The football had a garbage year too, so I really don't know what to say. Anyways, though I better think of something. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a break. When we're back, we're going to talk to Vern Knopp, assistant coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, to talk about, of course, second year in a row losing in the CIS national championship game. And, you know, this is Vern's been an assistant coach for all of Kevin Hansen's tenure here, all 10 years. And 7 of the last 8 years, they have made it to the national championship tournament. They've yet to come home with a gold. Their record in that tournament, 4 wins and 7 losses. So we'll talk to Vern. We'll see how he's doing here. Shocked. Totally shocked that Kyle Watson was kicked out of that game. The ref that called that second foul, that's shameful. That's just shameful. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a break. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's 2 licensed establishments.
The Gallery Lounge is your location for a wide variety of draft beers at student-friendly prices. Come to the gallery for a relaxed atmosphere and great food, including the famous pizza pretzel. Fellow students provide the entertainment with weekly open mic and karaoke nights. The gallery is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday till 1 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
All the things she been seeing, guess you better find your way back home.
Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Joining us on the line, of course, always a great friend of the radio show and the radio station, assistant coach for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Vern Knopp. Vern, how are we holding up 2 days after the loss?
Doing my best. It's been a difficult couple days.
Vern, one thing I did not know about, and I just found out, and I was actually... till I found this out, I was actually quite pleased with the way your games were reffed. I actually even thought...
Really?
I thought in the Calgary game, I thought the ref made some bad calls on Ross Beckering in the first half. I thought those were very questionable calls on him to give a player that stature, the two fouls, whatever, whatever, whatever. However, and I didn't know because they never mentioned it on the television broadcast. My first interview today was one of your seniors, Kyle Watson.
Yes.
What the hell happened there?
That's the big debate right now. Well, not really a debate. I just don't think, you know, going back to what you said about Ross Beckering, probably some couple maybe questionable calls. And I've never been part of a national championship final at any level where you call two intentional fouls on especially a fifth-year guy when they're just hustle plays. He's diving for loose balls. And, you know, if anything, if you want to call a foul, call a foul. But to call intentional fouls when they weren't there is kind of pretty much disturbing.
Yeah, Vern, I mean, I was saying to Kyle, you know, I was watching on the television broadcast, they never alluded to a technical foul being called. They never mentioned Kyle got kicked out of the game. And what happened was Kyle, you watched the Saskatchewan take the shots, and then they got the ball. And I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of weird. I guess they had called some sort of a breakaway. And then I saw it in the third quarter. That happened twice, right? That happened both of his fouls.
It happened once in the first half when he actually dove and got the ball. And the guy just fell down, but he didn't get it. From what I saw, he didn't get a piece of the guy that fell. He got all basketball, which was even a foul. And the one guy called an intentional foul. And then the last one, he definitely did foul the guy. He dove again for a loose ball and unfortunately clipped the guy's foot and the guy fell. And, you know, that was a foul. But again, you know, question whether they call it intentional. And if TSN didn't pick that up, the commentary as well, it's, you know, you got Rod Black, a figure skater, a guy that does figure skating, doesn't really know the game of basketball, making that, obviously didn't know it was an intentional call. And Leo Routon, surprisingly, being a national team coach, you think he would have actually, you know, saw that. But, you know, that's it's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, neither of them, you know, we were all kind of surprised Saskatchewan was still getting the ball. Because the way people line up for free throws in your league, remember that, is when the guy steps to the line for the first shot, it's almost like it's an intentional foul shot because nobody's there anyways, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're allowed to line up, but our guys, usually both teams seem that the latest trend is just to kind of huddle up and to go over, you know, decide what you guys are going to do next offense, possession, et cetera. So, I was kind of surprised. I didn't listen to the broadcast myself or even see it after since I got back, but that's pretty shocking that they wouldn't have picked up on that just to tell their audience what's going on.
Yeah, so I just found out about it right now. But, Vern, you said it, fifth-year guy, national championship game. I mean, especially a national championship game, if you're going to call an intentional foul at any point during that game, You want to be sure it's warranted. Because I'll say this, standing next to your bench there, very close to it, in that national championship game versus Carlton, I thought your old coach was a little close at times to getting a tee. But you could see it. The refs understood the significance of the game. They're just, you got to be really an absolute 100% no doubter to call a technical foul or an intentional foul in a national championship game and to call two on a guy on plays like that, fifth-year guy, he's thrown out of the game, has to watch it from row two in street clothes. That's shameful.
Yeah, it really is. And, yeah, again, go back to the semifinal game against Calgary with Ross Beckering. I mean, the sad part is they're Canada West officials that are actually making that call, so they even know the players. They would have known their fifth-year guys. And it doesn't matter whether you're first-year, second-year, fifth-year. I mean, you just don't make those calls. You're letting a guy that's given his heart and soul to the team, to the game of basketball, and you punish him by, you know, it's like I said, call a foul, that's fine, but to intentional foul and throwing them out, you think they know the rules, and it's actually really disappointing. And in some ways, it is a black mark on basketball.
Are you guys going to write a letter to have it where whoever called that second foul doesn't ref a UBC game anymore?
Well, as far as writing a letter, I don't think we'd go that far. There's, you know, there's always communication between coaches and officials, and unfortunately sometimes it falls on deaf ears. But it's just an unfortunate situation, but you can't really dwell on it now because it can't be changed, so it's just something you have to deal with and move forward.
Vern, what happened? You're up 12-4. Things looking good in this game versus Saskatchewan, and then I look up, and what was the score? What was the run they went on? I don't know the number completely offhand.
12-4, and then they went on a 6-0 run, and we called timeout because going in, it's one of the things Coach Hanson talked about. We got to stop their runs, so if they go up you know, anytime they have a 6-1 run, we're going to call timeout, which we did. And then we came out and they went on another 6-0 run, I believe. And so we called another timeout just to try to, you know, stop it again and get back on track. And it just seemed to, for the next few minutes, it just seemed everything kind of snowballed and went against us. We missed some easy shots and we had troubles getting stopping them.
And you never got right into the game. I don't think you ever got closer than 5 after that early run. Vern, quite frankly, you know, last year versus Carleton, really able to pinpoint. I thought, you know, Josh White getting pulled in the first half was key in that game. Chris Dick didn't have the same second half as he did in the first, and you couldn't get a defensive rebound in that game. What happened in that run? What went on there that made that happen? Because that was the difference in the game.
Well, I think it was just the missed layups. We had a few offensive rebounds. I mean, we out-rebounded for the game, which was one of our keys for the game. But we just missed a lot of easy shots that we normally hit. And then, you know, I think we did make a run. Getting it to 5 a couple times was a pretty good job on our part. It just seems like when we got to that point, I mean, we were right in the game, and they just came down and seemed to hit big shots when they had to.
So nothing in particular, hey? Like, you know, last year we were able to pinpoint the offensive rebounding. Nothing in particular this year, though.
What's that, sorry?
Nothing in particular this year. Like, last year it was Carleton off getting the rebounds over you guys.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, last year we came down to we gave way too many offensive rebounds. I think it was something like 18 offensive rebounds. And you know, this year I think Saskatchewan's probably the best rebounding team in the country. They're big, they're very athletic, and that was a huge key. That was one of the main reasons we lost to them in the Canada West semifinals. And to come back, have a chance to redeem ourselves in the finals, I thought our guys did a great job rebounding. Yeah, we gave up a few offensive rebounds, but you're going to give some up to that team. I think it was just our inability to. I mean, we didn't play our game. We just seemed to be walking the ball up too much. And our, you know, in the Kevin Hansen era, it's always been the ability to run the floor to get a lot of fast break hoops. And for whatever reason, we just really struggled to get in sync in our transition game.
And the other one was, of course, in the game in the Canada West Championship game here, the semifinal game. Sharon Glover, you guys really contained him, the leading scorer in the country. Not the case in the championship game. He goes 28 points, 10 assists against you guys. Michael Linklater, who I thought was the best player in the whole tournament, 20 points, 5 rebounds. And Troy Gosling did it again against you guys, 22 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, you could say it, and it's always a key in every sport, Saskatchewan's big players sure stepped up in the championship game.
Yeah, no question they did. He was leading scorer in the country for a reason, but I think it was our inability to stop Troy Gosling. Back to the semifinal game at Canada West, another 20 something points on us. So I think he was the biggest difference for them. I mean, Linklater played great all tournament, but I mean, yeah, it was just in our inability to contain their main three guys. And, you know, even a guy like Duncan Jones, again, coming off the bench and hitting some big threes for us or for them, it was just, you know, it was just one of those things. Things just didn't seem to go our way. And it just, so all you can say, really, it just seems like it wasn't meant to be.
You know, and you guys had your moments in this game. Josh White, this is sort of my question I'll have for you guys. 16 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds. Very good statistics, but I just wonder with Josh's, and you saw you guys do it a few times this year, maybe sometimes it's better if he tries to just become a go-to scorer as opposed to playing a point guard who's trying to set guys up all the time.
Yeah, it's just something. I mean, it's kind of a fine line. I mean, yeah, I think he still had 6 assists. I think, you know, that's just Josh's nature, is to get other people involved in the basketball game. You know, he really is an unselfish player. He just didn't seem to quite, you know, play up to his usual self. And I think, you know, it's really hard. I mean, Josh is such a talented player, and he's carried us at times and put us on his shoulders all the time during the year. And it's a lot to ask him to do it for 3 games at Nationals as well. I mean, everyone expects it, and you know, there's a lot of pressure on Josh because, you know, he's our best player and we need him to perform. And, you know, you look at the numbers, he played his heart out. And and did he have his best game for us? No, but I mean, he just competed every single time. And it was just it was just an unfortunate he had a tough weekend during you know, even in the opening game and the second game, he just didn't seem to be his usual self. You know, we just didn't run the floor like he normally does. And but I, you know, I think that was, there was a lot of, you know, there was a bullseye on Josh's back coming in as a player of the year. You know, a lot of people really wanted to key on him, and teams, you know, were obviously, they had a lot of chance to watch tape, and he was the focus of every team's defensive plan. They know if they shut down Josh, that we're going to struggle at times. And you know, I think it's just more of a credit to what the other teams did to us.
Yeah, and it just seemed like this was a game, like, they did contain Josh. Blaine LeBranch, not a great day shooting the ball. Nathan Yu had trouble shooting the ball. Malish had a run of three threes, but if you take that out, he didn't do much in this game offensively either, or anything, actually. The other guys failed. Nobody stepped up and had that really huge game. Kamar Burke played terrific. He played terrific all tournament, but nobody had that monster game to pick up for Josh there, hey?
Yeah, I mean, Kamar was just unbelievable. I think he pretty much averaged double what he did during the regular season, only 7 points in the regular season. I think he was pretty close to averaging 15 a game during the tournament. But, you know, it's a team game. It is an ultimate team game. You know, it wasn't just on Josh's shoulders. I mean, yes, he's our best player, and he's led us all year. But he needed other guys to step up, and unfortunately, for whatever reasons, we just weren't able to get the ultimate team performance. We were never on our A game, even though we won in the quarter, the first round, and the semifinals on Saturday. It just seemed like we struggled. We just knew it as coaches. We were struggling offensively. We just didn't seem to have it, and not really sure why. It's something that, you know, maybe we'll never know, but. You know, all we can ask at the end of the day is our guys played their hearts out, and, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Like I told the guys after the game or individually, and, you know, even when we got to the airport, that, you know, we're, as coaches, we are proud of them. We had a great season, and unfortunately we didn't get the national championship that we set our goal at the beginning of the year for, but in the long run, you know, sometimes you can't control everything.
Yeah, you know, you had the real bad first half versus Lakehead, then the huge run to start the second half, which, you know, put them away. And that Calgary game, I got to say, that was kind of a strange game. You know, you had Ross Beckering seemed like he was playing terrific, just he got into that foul trouble right away in the first half. I got to say, I've never seen Robbie Sahota play so bad as he did against you guys in that game. It was a weird game. It definitely wasn't the best Calgary UBC game we've ever seen, hey?
No, there's, you know, it's tough. The teams have played so much in big games now in the last 3 years. You know, the teams know each other, especially the players know each other, the personnel so well. Know everybody's strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, it's a perfect example how at times Josh and Blaine struggled this weekend, how Robbie Sahota for Calgary, who's just torched us in the past, he had what we thought was probably the worst game he'd ever played against us. And, you know, those things happen. I mean, you can't be on your A game all the time. And it was just, you know, it's unfortunate that we just couldn't perform like we had all year.
Vern, 7 trips to the Nationals in the last 8 years for your team. Obviously, the big stat coming into last year was you'd lost at Nationals 5 years in a row in the first round. You get over that last year, make it to the finals, lose to Carlton. This year, though, you know, so that was seen as a success, or at least more of a success. This year, though, getting to the Nationals, playing Saskatchewan, a team you know, a team you've beaten in the regular season, they beat you in overtime here in the Canada West semifinal. I mean, we all thought you guys had this one coming into that day, Vern.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody felt that way, and as a basketball team, we felt that way too. That was our tournament to win, or I guess you could say our tournament to lose. And you know, it's unfortunate. It's basketball can be a crazy game, and life can be cruel sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know, it gives other, you know, people and other people that you know. As far as UBC goes, you know, we heard for so many years UBC can't win the first game at Nationals, and now it gives the pundits something else to talk about. Instead of can't winning the first game, now it'll be can't win the big game at Nationals as far as the finals go. And, you know, it just gives us something to motivate ourselves for going into next year. We have a lot of guys returning, and, you know, it's been since Coach Hansen came here, the goal has always been to win a national championship, and that's not going to change. And that means there's more pressure on us next year, so be it. Eventually we got over the hump of winning the first game at Nationals, and I think eventually we're going to win that final game.
I'm sorry to say it, Vern, but I do have to ask it, but 7 times in 8 years, no championship, that does have to be tough for you guys.
Oh, no question. It feels like you're just getting kicked in the stomach repeatedly. It's not easy, but you put so much work into it, not just basically for the 7 months of the season starting in September, but even in the work in the off season that Coach Hansen and Coach Knorr do. It's really disheartening and it's tough, but the competitors and all of us will just get us motivated for next year. And we're doing something right because we're getting the Nationals every year and coming in. I don't know how many Canada West championships we have and how many times we finished first in BC. There's in the grand scheme of things, there's 41 teams that didn't win the championship. Only one team can win the championship this year, and I know there'd be a lot of teams that would kill to have the success we have. We're doing something right, and eventually we're going to figure this out and take care of getting our first championship. But like I said, life can be cruel sometimes, and we just have to learn from it and make it get it to make us stronger.
The question, going into next year, obviously you're losing Kyle Watson and Blaine LeBranch. I'm looking at just sort of on the sheet, I'm looking at maybe Nathan Yeo and Melvin Mayotte sort of being the guys who are going to be asked to do a little more next year. But my question, and I asked Kyle Watson this, recruiting, what's going on? I didn't ask him that, but who are going to be those guys to take the place of, say, what Nathan Yeo was doing this year and what Melvin Mayotte was doing this year? You guys got a plan for that? He mentioned Denny Duma, but he only mentioned one guy.
Yeah, well, Denny's the guy that we brought in last year that we feel can, actually came on stronger later in the year, but because we had such a veteran group, it was really hard for him to get on the court. Probably one of the better shooters in the conference. He's a guy that definitely will be looking to have a good off season and to step up. Our red shirts, Tommy Morrison and Jazz Gill, they have an opportunity to come in next year and fight. They have to fight for playing time. Will they start? Probably not, but that'll determine itself over the course of the summer and in training camp. We do have Doug Plum coming from Fraser Valley, who played there 2 years ago. He'll be coming in and vying for playing time. And, we expect Nathan Yeo and Melvin Mayo. I mean, Nathan Yeo will be going into his fourth year with us. He's a guy that was highly recruited coming out of high school and has had a good start to his career. And it's just a guy that, needs to, continue to mature as a player. And, he puts a lot of effort in, and we think he's a guy that can come in and maybe start for us next year. Melvin Mayotte's another guy that can come in and step up. I mean, these guys are capable of playing on other teams. They'd probably be playing 35 minutes a game. It's not like we're rebuilding. We're just reloading, and we also have a commitment from Mike Lewandowski, the 6'7" post from Pitt Meadows, who's one of the top players in the province this year. He's a guy we feel that can come in and help us inside as well and maybe take a bit of the burden off of Graham Bath and take over some of Kyle Watson's playing time. And, I think we're in a good situation. We have a lot of returning guys. The guys have a feel for what it's like to win and to get to Nationals. And we feel good about next year's chances.
Vern, just staying on that quickly, though, losing two guys. You mentioned the two red shirts, so that puts you right back at the number 13. Then you mentioned two more guys coming in. We going to see some guys who aren't graduating, maybe not back on this team this year, next year?
It's hard to say. I mean, we have to, we have to have our final meetings with our coaches. We're going to have.
Talking about there. That's a lot of. There's a lot of players being mentioned there. There's not even enough room on the bench for all of them.
It's true, and I think competition is a good thing. It's going to be an interesting off season and training camp next year. Players can't come in expecting that things are going to be given to them. They have to go in and earn it. But again, as far as it's too early to talk about
right. If
players are coming back and who's going to play this and that spot. We, as coaches, we need to take some time away and digest what's happened in the past weekend, in the past month. And, we'll meet and come up with a game plan, and we'll have our individual meetings with the players, especially Coach Hansen, obviously. And then we'll come up with a game plan on what's going to happen in the off season. But, it's people, too many players. Well, it's a nice situation to have. And, things happen in the off season that are always unexpected that you can't control. So, we'll see. But it's bottom line is we expect to win again next year, and that's the plan going in.
Doug Plum, I believe you mentioned, just looking him up, leading scorer for Fraser Valley 2 years ago.
Yep,
that's the guy. And who's the kid out of Pitt Meadows?
Mike Lewandowski. He's a 6'7" post. Actually, didn't play his grade 11 year because he tore up his knee, but he's back this year. Was close to being healthy. I wouldn't say he was 100%, but he's one of the top players in the province. We think it's a guy that can come in and fight for playing time. As to how much, it's way too early to decide. It's tough for a first-year player to you know, to come into UBC and get significant amount of playing times, but it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be shocking too. I mean, you know, we go through this every year. Every time we lose a few players, people are always like, oh, they're going to have a, you know, when Casey Archibald left, people knew Chris Dick would step up, but they didn't know if that was going to be enough. And then when Chris Dick turned, you know, was all conference and we got to national championship with him, it's like, okay, well, Chris Dick's not gone. Who's going to step up? It's always someone stepping up. And when we feel confident, there's a lot of guys on our roster that can step up and perform when needed. So it's, I think we'll be pretty strong next year.
So, yeah, you mentioned this Pitt Meadows kid can help out in the post. And, you know, obviously Graham Bath and Kamar Burke. Well, the one player I do have to ask you about and your assessment of his freshman year and what we can look forward to next year and what's happening here is, you know what I'm talking about, your big, highly touted recruit coming into this season, Chad Posthumus. Okay, you know, didn't play that much as a freshman, didn't play at all in nationals that I saw. Assess his year, Vernon. What can we expect? I mean, how do you get this guy to be a top player?
You know, that's really the big question going in. And to answer that, it's really, you know, it's got to come from, only Chad can answer that question. He's got to come in with, to be honest with you, a better work ethic. And that was his biggest reason for not getting playing time. It's he's got to be able to prove himself in practice first before he can get into games. You know, he's a big 6'10", weighs probably 250. You know, the potential's there, but it's got to come from, I guess they say, the mental aspect first. You know, that's the biggest question. He's got to, you know, I guess you could say, mature a little bit and come out with a better work ethic. And, I mean, the sky's the limit for him, but it's really got to come from within from him.
Yeah, because you could sure use that body rebounding in these big games, hey?
Well, and it shows. I mean, the size on Saskatchewan gave everybody all sorts of problems. But with that said, Carlton's won 5 of the last 6 championships, and you know, and they're not normally the biggest team in Canada. It's just it's a work ethic. It's a mentality that you have to have. Like Coach Hadden says, we want pit bulls, guys that are just going to do whatever it takes to win and to get rebounds. And, you know, Calgary was a bigger team, but we out-rebounded them in the final game. So, you know, we showed, even without having Chad on the floor, that, you know, we could rebound. Graham Bath is an undersized post, but he works. He got such a big heart and works so hard. And I think he ended up with 13 points. And it's a guy that we think can average double figures for us. And, you know, maybe not get 10 rebounds, but he's not going to give up rebounds because he does such a great job of boxing out and taking out the other team. And look at the size between him and Ross Beckering, and he's done a great job on Beckering the last couple times we've played him. If he can do that to him, one of the top players in Canada, he can do that to anybody. I mean, you know,
he also played with Jacob Dirksen in those games too, right?
So and you know, he held Jacob Dirksen to 9 points in the first game of the year last year, making a statement. And you know, Graham just keeps coming and working hard. He's a leader on and off the floor. He's a guy going into his fourth year. You know, third year really kind of starts determining what a guy can do. And Graham showed he started most of our games this year. I think he can have a huge year for us. And, you know, Kamar Burke is probably might be one of the best rebounders in the country. I just don't think he knows it. But really, the Nationals for him was his coming out party. First time he'd been to playoffs, first time he'd been to Nationals. And on the biggest stage, he had his best games for us as a UBC Thunderbird. So I would expect, you know, huge things from Kamar Burke, whether he plays on the perimeter or on the post. Probably expect him playing both next year. And I think he can be a huge contributor. Kamar just has to know how good he really can be. And I think he figured that out this past weekend.
Vern, last thing, thanks again for doing this, is there's a ticking clock potentially that we're not sure about yet here on this campus, and you guys are loaded with third and fourth year guys. You're going to get at least 2 more years, but I will bet that is it. I'm betting this school will be NCAA 2 years. 2 years you got left. And Vern, you got 2 years left to get this thing done. You got a ton of third and fourth year guys. You got to get it done in 2 years.
Well, you know, we're thinking right now, we're just thinking next year. I mean, we can't think about 2 years from now. You know, like I said, we've been to national 7 times now in 8 years. That's the goal going into every year, is to win that championship. And, you know, and it won't change. Come September, that's when we have our first official team meeting of the season. That's going to be our number one goal again, is let's get back to nationals and let's win a national championship. And, you know, you just got to keep working at it, keep plugging away, and eventually, you know, we'll get the monkey off our back.
And Vern, get me to nationals next year. Would you do something, goddamn it?
Hey, there's only so many things I can control being an assistant coach, especially the fact that I'm not faculty there. So I don't know, maybe you got to start networking yourself a little bit more.
God.
But, you know, it's been, you know, it would have been nice to have you out there, but, you know, it was, our focus is just, we just got to get our team back there. So, you know,
Vern,
you got to kind of work for your own self there, Daryl.
I had Jordan Yu all lined up. He's coaching now, of course. He was going to do the color with me.
Yep.
And the storylines that were there for the our pregame shows for that semifinal versus Calgary and the national championship versus Saskatchewan, I was kind of, you got it from my text. You got my text messages over there. Wish I was there.
I did.
Congratulations.
You know, I mean,
wish I was there. You got those.
You know what? I got that from you, and I got that from several people that I know. Everybody wants to be a part of it, and which is nice because it means, you know, a lot of people had their expectations that we were going to go and perform and win, and you know, that's part of the biggest disappointment is that we didn't let ourselves down. We let a lot of people down, whether it's faculty, alumni, just loyal supporters to us, you know, families that we all feel we let down, and that was the toughest part. There's a lot of weight on this team, on this program's shoulders, just because so many people want us to win so bad. But we can't bring everybody, right? Like, you know, there's, you know, Jordan, you ended up making the trip himself. He ended up bucking up himself and made the trip and was our number one fan out there. And
okay,
a lot of parents came, but, you know, what can you do?
All right, I'll remember you say. I didn't want to be a part of anything. I just wanted to go out and call some games and get drunk at night.
Well, you know, you still could have done that, but, you know, I don't know what to say. It was a great experience. So, I mean, UBC, they do a great job when they allow us the opportunity to go there, and, you know, they always take good care of us. So, I don't know what to say, Daryl.
You suck. You suck, hole, you. You suck.
I'm just happy Coach Hansen takes me. So
yeah,
that's my main worry, to be honest with you.
All right. Vern Knopp from the athletic department not supporting me in my...
I'm supporting you at heart, but I have no control over doing anything else for you, buddy.
I was trying to get the wrong horse on my side. I was trying to get the wrong guy to fight for me. Vern, thanks for doing this. Another excellent year for you guys. You got to do this, though, soon, okay?
Yes, so like I said, that's the goal every year.
Yeah.
And to all our fans out there and loyal supporters, you know, we feel bad that we let everybody down, but you can rest assured that we'll be back in full force next year and working just as hard to get back there and to finally finish it off.
All right, because I think 2 years you're out of this, you're going somewhere else, so...
I'm just focused on next year, Daryl. So get ready for next year and get this ball rolling again.
Okay, thanks for doing this, Vern. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Daryl. Appreciate it.
All right, that was Vern Knopp, assistant coach. We're going to take a quick break here. Howard Samora of the Vancouver Province will be on with us right after the break. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
Are you tired of spending your hard-earned money on CDs, compact discs, I mean, DVDs even, whatever, anything that might be better with
radio-ness?
I'm sick of listening to music without any funny quips in between. No commercials, I mean, come on. What about
Jay?
And
Mark.
And
Jason.
The Bear. All those guys. Now you'll never have to miss out on crazy
Mark Farabee
and
Jason
the Bear
Paulette,
because
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver
has come up with their own label. That's right. You can listen to music and never have to listen to...
You can listen to music and never have to miss out on the radio-ness.
Listen to Friday Sunrise, Fridays from 7:30 to 9 a.m. on 101.9 CITR with your hosts, Mark Farabee
and Jason Paulette.
Do you want to have your music played? Have your horoscope read, or just
give us some random advice?
Send us an email at fridaysunrise@vanmusic.ca or call us during the show at 604-UBC-CITR or 604-822-2487. Friday Sunrise, Fridays from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Joining us on the line, Mr. Basketball for the week. You watched a lot of basketball, hey? Howard Samora, the Vancouver Province. Howard, how you doing?
Hey, Gerald, good to be with you. You know, hey, thanks for Mr. Basketball, the tag. I lost track of how many games I watched from from Tuesday through Sunday, CIS and BC High School variety kind of combined, but it was a basketball smorgasbord for sure this past week.
Yeah, there you go. Of course, Howard, helping us out doing the BC AAA High School Basketball Championships with our very own Wilson Wong. And so did you see all three UBC games? Did you get in all of them?
You know what? I have to say I only saw the championship final.
Okay.
Just based on the times and the unavailability of the streaming capacity inside the Agrodome didn't allow us to be able to watch those games. It was unfortunate, but, you know, I got quality reports back from Ben Schack, who was at the tournament site, obviously in Ottawa. So I felt like I knew what I was getting into Sunday when I turned the TV on. And you know what? Memories of the Saskatchewan Canada West Final Four opening round still clearly in my head when I turned that game on. So I knew it was going to be a pretty competitive game.
Howard, before we get into the game, I actually didn't know about it. I should have, but I didn't know about it. They never brought it up on the TV once when it happened. I did not know that Kyle Watson was actually thrown out of the game for UBC for those sort of in their own end diving on loose ball fouls, which they called. Because you saw, the announcers, Rod Black and Leo Routon, just sort of call it as a foul, and there he is shooting the free throws. And then before you know it, Saskatchewan's actually getting the ball. I actually thought it was quite, and I wasn't very critical of this officiating during the tournament, but those calls against Kyle Watson, two technicals thrown out of the game, fifth year senior, I thought that was actually quite atrocious.
Yeah, you know, and I have to admit as well, I didn't find out until after I had written my story that he had been kicked out of the game. Like, I just didn't know. They didn't refer to it. You wondered where he was. And of course, it's awfully tough to get comments when you're not on site from those involved on the losing side of the ledger. They've spent their whole year building to that day, and it was really hard to get people to talk afterwards. So I never, that was a little further down on my list of questions, and I couldn't get a lot of questions in. So, but I will say one foul that he took was simply an open opportunity, two guys going for a loose ball. I just, couldn't have disagreed more with the call. It's unfortunate for Kyle, and for it not to get brought up on the national broadcast was tough as well, because, I mean, you know what he means to that team in terms of the grit factor, and, it might not be reflected in points, but it is in so many of those other, intangible qualities, Daryl, as I know he's part of the heart and soul of that team, so that was a tough loss.
No, and the way I thought it was going out, I kind of wondered to myself, okay, Kyle's not out there, but I also wondered, like you said, he's not necessarily the top scorer, so maybe they were just going for groups that could just score, because that's what they absolutely had to have at that point. And here I am talking to him. I actually interviewed him today, not even knowing it, when I went into the interview, that he was actually thrown out of the game. He didn't know about it when he got that foul. He didn't even know he was thrown out of the game. Comes out, he actually had to watch the game from row two in street clothes when he was technically not even allowed in the building.
Oh, there's a story I didn't know. It's neat to be enlightened a few days after the fact, what you don't get when you're not there on site. But that's an unfortunate
ending
for a guy who came to UBC and really delivered everything that he was, supposed to deliver here and more. One of the favorite people I've dealt with in the Thunderbird program over the last, decade is Kyle Watson. He's just a pure energy guy who just wants to win for his teammates, and that's an unfortunate way, obviously an unfair way for a guy to have to finish his CIS career.
Yeah, but Howard, and I do have to say, you kind of have me a little, just talking about me here very briefly, you have me a little justified. Of course, I didn't get sent. It was a multiple person decision to not send me to Nationals. I was very disappointed in it, but I kind of like what you're hearing there. You actually needed me there. You could have had a little radio in the Agrodome, perhaps.
Of course. I relied on you last year. I mean, I wish Can West would send me to these events, and I will say it's unfortunate for me. I mean, I'm coming off, Daryl. I know you don't want to hear my problems, but 21 straight days working, and yeah. I'll tell you, three straight weekends, I covered CIS championships via the web and by TV, which it shouldn't have to be that way. I feel I should do that because I can give my readers some insights, because I've been covering these teams all year, that those on site in the print media won't be able to do because they're only seeing them once or twice a year. So that's a trade-off I give my readers, and I apologize I can't get out there. But, these are different times, my friend, with the cost of travel and stuff, and I know we're both battling it, and we're both, supporters of CIS sports, and I hope all this stuff changes for the both of us, that we're both there next year, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do have to say, we did the web. Obviously, the web was available, which did cut out a lot. Not many people have TSN2, but one thing, from a UBC perspective, we could have done good old one-hour pregame shows there and lots to set up with for Calgary, UBC in the semi, and Calgary, Saskatchewan, of course. And
well, there was a buzz. There was a buzz in our newsroom for those who are casual, you know, observers, or those who really don't care about university sports. When the TV is on and it's a national championship, and UBC is the alma mater to so many people in this area, that, you know, suddenly it becomes interesting, and everybody wants to know what's going on. And you know, I really think our local media contingent should be out there covering, you know, obviously a team that Kevin Hansen has spent so much time building. And you know, people might think of it as a disappointment. I know Kevin and the team are disappointed, but I'm looking at, you know, how far this team has come from losing 5 years in a row in the first round to going to the national final 2 years in a row. And if people think that there are baby steps you have to take, maybe that's the case and these are tough ones. But the UBC program is clearly pointed in the right direction, and they're the most due team in CIS sports, I think, to win a title. And if Kevin and the guys keep pushing, I think it's going to happen really soon.
Howard, on to the game, of course, UBC, and this is what I've been – I asked Kyle Watson at the beginning and Vern Knopp, assistant coach, after him – what did you see happen? UBC up 12-4, things are looking great, and then before you know it, Saskatchewan is just taking it to them. They built up a real big lead that they never surrendered. It was just a big run right after UBC had taken that 12-4 lead. What did you see happen to UBC? What did Saskatchewan do in that big Husky push, which I think might have been something like a 30-7 run for all I know? It was a big one.
It was a big one, and we'll get into the differences in runs in a second, because there are different kinds of runs you can put on teams. But I really felt that after it got to 12-4 that there was a lack of focus there. I mean, you know, to give up transition points to them and for them to score with their bigs going down the floor, I thought the way they did in certain stages of the game just told you they weren't taking care of the basketball. And you can say whatever you want about getting ready. It's the number one intangible in sports. How do you keep your focus? You know, either at the start of a game, the start of a third quarter, or at any juncture of a game, once you get comfortable in your mind, you know, how do you keep that focus there? And for huge stretches, it wasn't there. I mean, I saw this team they just took over the game after that point. And it didn't even seem like it was that quick of a run, but before you knew it, you know, UBC was trailing, and any attempt to really gain strong runs of momentum just never came. I think UBC put runs on Saskatchewan, but their runs were different than the Saskatchewan runs, because UBC would mount these mini, you know, 10-2 or 8-1 type of runs, but then they would give up a ton back, and so they never built momentum with any of their runs. I think Saskatchewan's runs were different. They were bigger, more explosive, and they actually gave something tangible to the Huskies in terms of taking over the tempo and control of the game. That's what UBC could never gain. So even when it got to 5 points, and you know that if you make a couple of turnovers and hit a big three or get a shot, maybe you're back in the game. I just didn't have that feeling in my gut that they were going to come back from even the five-point deficit late in the game.
Yeah, and the one thing UBC never got in that game, and, you know, Josh White, of course, CIS Player of the Year, he just isn't that kind of player, I guess, is UBC did always have, and granted they haven't won this tournament. This is, of course, as close as they've ever got besides last year. They would have your Casey Archibald, who could just kind of take over. They could have your Chris Dick. They didn't have that kind of player this year. I just wonder, maybe that might have played a factor. I don't know.
I think Josh White can be that kind of a player, though. And maybe it just wasn't there for him that day. It's hard to say he's not the kind of guy that can take a team on his back, because, you know, I think he can. I think he does it perhaps in a little more subtle ways.
Yeah.
But I think he can get an entire team going and help everybody step up to the plate, you know, as well as any of the great UBC players of the past. So, you know, clearly we didn't see it, or they, you know, perhaps they would have won the game. But I still got to say, UBC put up a great effort. And as I've said to people, Daryl, and you may not agree with me, I really think that sometimes in sports, teams get on a roll, and you can look at yourself in the mirror and say what you want to say, but sometimes the other team is just in a zone and have just found something that is just an intangible quality that you just can't turn back. And if you ask me, I think Saskatchewan would have beaten any team they played in the final. You know, maybe this magic stretch started 3-4 weeks ago, for whatever long or however long it lasted, it was an incredible run of team chemistry and togetherness, and it was enough to win the national title.
Yeah, and you know, I'll talk about Saskatchewan here, Howard, and just to stay on Josh White is, what I meant is he I'm not sure if he's that kind of just pure hot shooter that Casey and Chris were, you know, just sort of the, they could just score a bundle of points in a hurry like that. But on to Saskatchewan is, this says it about the team right here, and you were on this campus. Remember, Howard, if they don't beat UBC in that semifinal game, they're not getting that national wild card berth. They're probably for sure not getting it. And how about this team? In a game, I at the time called it the biggest upset I have ever seen UBC surrender on their home court, was that Canada West semifinal loss to Saskatchewan. Sure doesn't look like that now. But how about a team who just fought so hard against UBC in that Canada West semifinal game at the buzzer? We're knotted. Nolan Brudel at the free throw line has to hit one of two, and Saskatchewan is going to the Canada West Championship, going to the national tournament. He misses both. They go to overtime. Early in overtime, their best player in that game, Troy Gottslig, fouls out. What does Saskatchewan do up against the wall with both of those things occurring? They beat UBC by 18 points at the Ward Gym in that overtime period. I think when you break it all down, in a game they had to win that UBC didn't have to win, I think that says a lot about that team right there, Howard.
It does. I mean, you know, everybody remembers, you know, how they finished regulation. But if they had won in regulation, put it this way. I think Saskatchewan became a better team because it got to overtime and then put that hellacious run on UBC. And whatever it was, 19-2 or whatever it was,
yeah.
It was from somewhere else. It wasn't from, you know, our realm. It was from somewhere else. I've never seen anything like it. I think that was the number one confidence booster for that team. Everything that they did from that point on reflected back to the overtime period and how they dominated the number one team in the country at the time. I mean, you can't help but get better. But by doing that to a team, you broke their will, basically, in overtime. I mean, there's no other way to look at a 19-2 run in overtime, you know, in a conference semifinal situation. So, like I said, I think UBC, you know, although Kevin Hansen said they didn't reach their full offensive, you know, kind of tempo and all that kind of stuff during the weekend, you know, perhaps they would have won if they did. I think you just have to say Saskatchewan was just on a roll. I really honestly feel that that team would have beaten anybody they played on that day.
Well, you look at who Saskatchewan beat. They beat the number four team, Windsor. They beat Carleton, who's won five of the last six championships in the semi. And then number three, UBC, who was ranked number one for a ton of the season during the regular year. I mean, what a road they had to go through to pull this thing off. And remember how they were, in essence, in a Sweet 16 game, because if they didn't beat UBC in the semifinal game of the conference championships here, they're also not going to Nationals. I mean, what a four-game stretch they had to put together there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at what they did at the Nationals. Let's not forget they won the conference title the next day as well, you know, against Calgary. So, I mean, they did so many great things. I mean, the stretch, and you heard Jockum say it afterwards, trying to kind of play down the fact that they came out of nowhere. And he said, you know what, we've won 12 straight games. I mean, this just didn't happen overnight. In a sense, it did, because against elite competition, back-to-back-to-back, five straight or whatever it was against elite teams, they did. I mean, they just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, people weren't talking about Gottslig and Duncan Jones and all these guys as this incredible team that, you know, that is destined to win a national championship. I mean, they were one of those good teams that were sitting, you know, in the level below, you know, UBC in the Canada West.
Well,
all of a sudden, here they come. I mean, I haven't seen it. You know, I haven't seen a rebirth of a team that late in the season and have it have the substantive effect it had by winning the national championship in such a short amount of time. It really was a Cinderella story. And, you know, I think UBC, it was tough for them to have to beat that team in the final. And a lot of people say, Dale, you know, sometimes there's a team you just don't match up against. I think in a lot of ways, the way Saskatchewan was playing, that was a team that UBC didn't match up well against.
Well, and the other one with Saskatchewan is obviously with the way the playoffs was working in the Canada West, which I just hated, with the crossover, playing a team in the other division and the four series winners would meet in the conference championship. I honestly thought that if Vic or Trinity were to play Saskatchewan in the first round, because I kind of saw that was the way it was going to go, I was pretty sure there was going to be three Pacific Division teams here for the conference championship. Until they were playing Fraser Valley, who I wasn't sure about, I thought Saskatchewan was going to lose in the first round to Trinity or Vic. I did.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wasn't counting on Saskatchewan, you know, obviously doing anything near what they did, but they did it. And, you know, who knows what the spinoff effect is for that program. And, I mean, if you saw Sharon Glover rip his jersey off at the end of the game and really pronounce, you know, their arrival, it was a pretty emotional scene overall. You can tell that those guys weren't in this place a couple of months ago. Just by the way they reacted after the game, they were, I think they were a little cocky, but I think they were a little bit surprised as well, and they were happy to let everybody know that, you know, they had arrived.
Yeah, I just remember interviewing Troy Gottslig, and when they beat UBC in the semis after that game, just, he said it was unbelievable that they were going to Nationals, and now to win it, wow, good for them, you know?
Yeah, like, what a team. Hey, yeah. Gottslig to me was so impressive. The way he was able to score the basketball, you know, they found him, and he was so mobile and athletic-looking, and all of a sudden, here's this guy, the missing piece that every team wants, a guy like that, you know? And who knows, is Mike Lewandowski going to be one of those type of guys for UBC? I think Lewandowski, who they're bringing in next year from Pitt Meadows, can be that kind of guy in the open floor. He's a multi-skilled kid who's tough of mind and tough of body, and I think you give him a couple of years, maybe you've got that Gottslig type of kid, you know, on the floor for your team.
Sticking with UBC and next year, Howard, which we got to do, and I was just interviewing Vern Knopp, who's, of course, been an assistant coach for Kevin Hansen, all 10 of Kevin Hansen's years here, and I said to Vern, you know, I'm going to bet, Vern, that in 2 years, I mean, we don't know, Howard, it's been a long story, you guys are going to be NCAA. He seems to think the same thing. They got 2 years to do this. Yeah, UBC most likely. I mean, yes, they're getting better. Yes, 7 and 8 years is unbelievable. But the fact is, the clock's ticking. You look at their third and fourth year guys; they are loaded. They're top players. You're mentioning this kid from Pitt Meadows. Obviously, I don't know him, but they're all their top guys are third and fourth year guys. I mean, Howard, yes, it's an amazing run, but you got to win this title already, and you got two more seasons to do it.
Yeah, and you know what, let's not forget as well that, you know, while Kevin Hansen has brought in a lot of great graduating high school players, he's also, I think, set a standard in terms of getting quality transfer players to come into this program. And you know what, if it's not next year, perhaps it's set up to be that Cinderella 40th year without a title, let's go to the CIS next year and win it all type of scenario in 2012. Who knows? All I know is Kevin Hansen knows what he's doing. He just has to keep his head up and just keep going, and he's going to get this title. You know, I think that it's shown by the quality of team he's put together and that incredible, incredible winning percentage that he has. I mean, you blush when you look at this number. You just go, is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing number. So, I still think good things are ahead for the program. They lose quality players, but they keep bringing them in. So let's just see what happens.
And it's part of the fun in covering the team, Howard, is – and when we interviewed Randy Knorr mostly, I mean, when we get to cover this team, we get to cover them like they're a national championship contender. If they win and they don't play well, we still get to say that. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly.
They
are. I mean, they are a fun, fun team. I'm sad the season's over, Daryl, because I realize now we got to wait till October now or late October to see them again.
Kamar Burke, definitely a guy who announced his presence on the scene here for UBC and put up big numbers for Thompson Rivers. But there's a guy who, you know, with Blaine leaving and Kyle Watson leaving, I mean, he could easily lead UBC in scoring next year.
Well, I mean, and he's a guy I talked to after the game who was willing to talk in the aftermath of the loss. I thought it's such a classy thing for Kamar to come on the phone for a few minutes and chat. And he, you know what, the first thing he's saying is like, you know, we are going to miss Blaine and Kyle. There's no question about it. But I have to think we can get back here and we can win this thing. And that's the first thing he's saying. You need that kind of positive reinforcement. And you know what? Those around the program in coaching positions, are, you know, and us in the media, we keep bringing up 7 times in 8 years, Kevin Hansen's 10 years there, all that kind of stuff. The new guys in this program, they're not thinking about that kind of stuff. They got their taste this year. They want to go back and win it next year. And Kamar Burke, I mean, wow, what a player. You can't ask for a better guy to step into that next, you know, level of leadership and production for your team next year. He can be that kind of guy. There's no question.
Yeah, an interesting thing also, Howard, with UBC, and just want to sort of get your thoughts on this, is 11 returning players coming back to the team next year. You've got the 2 redshirt players, 2 players being brought in. You mentioned the kid. What's his name again from Pitt Meadows?
Mike Lewandowski.
The 6'7 point?
6'7, yeah.
And then Doug Plum, I believe is his name, a transfer from Fraser Valley, who led the league and who led that team in scoring 2 years ago. That's 15 guys. There's going to be some guys, I think, on this team right now that aren't going to be back next year.
I think that's the reality. If you're around the situation of a team that's ranked number one in the country for 8 weeks and contends for the national title, a bit of a reality, I guess. But you know what? Whatever ends up happening, you know you're going to have a great team. I think Kevin continues on building on the theme of, you know, I love the fact that, you know, we have, you know, 7 to 8 guys who can score 8 to 9 points a game, and maybe next year they'll have 7 double-figure scorers in a game, some crazy stat like that. He also wants to have it known that, you know, I think that you do want to have a guy like a Kamar Burke, a Josh White, guys that will step up and be that Casey Archibald type of a guy. You still need that factor on the team, but the team is loaded with depth, you're right, and there's certain guys next year that really can take a big step up that we didn't see this year. I think if you give more responsibility to a guy like Denny Duma, I think you'll see more offensive production from him, and we'll see what happens with a guy who redshirted named Jazz Gill, who's a fantastic offensive player. You know, can he get floor time and substantive effect on this team next year as a pretty young guy? There's so many questions and so many interesting pieces to the puzzle here with this UBC team.
And one guy, Howard, obviously hugely touted recruit coming over from Winnipeg, and Vern just said it. Vern said to me on the air earlier on this show, has to improve his work ethic. We'll see what happens with this guy, but it's really going to be a guy. You know, you sort of give him a free pass for his freshman. This will be year two next year. Chad Posthumus, he's really going to have to make strides. And Vern said it to me on this show today, his work ethic, he has to improve it. And that's a little scary one to hear when you hear that.
Well,
you know?
You know what? Yeah, and I think as a young guy who has been, you know, you can't help but, you know, when you've been that good that long through high school and everything ran through you and you were basically the team, you know, it is a tough adjustment, and I feel for the young guy. But at the same time, you know what, when you're in a situation like this where you've got a team that can beat Division I teams that come in here and play you, clearly there's a great competitive level within this structure. And, you know, nothing is handed out. You have to earn everything that you get, and you have to say to yourself every day that you're part of a team. And if you can't do that, you know, things will happen where you're not going to get into the rotation. And so I certainly hope, you know, if Vern says that work ethic has to go up, I trust Vern. I think Posthumus is a guy who can help him in a huge way. They would love to have that size out there. So I'm crossing my fingers that everything, you know, goes well for Chad next year and he can join that rotation and make UBC even stronger.
Or maybe he's one of the one or two guys that does a little transfer shift. We don't know.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you know what? You can choose to take a great challenge in life and go after playing for a team that can win a national championship. And I'm not saying this is right or wrong. Or you can transfer to another program. Well, they'll play you, you know, 37 minutes a game, and you can lead the country in scoring, but you might not win or play well as a team. It's a personal preference, and you know, certainly you hope he chooses to want to be a part of the UBC program if that's what it's coming down to. But I think he's a guy with a great future here if he wants to work at it.
Yeah, I'm not basing, you know, I don't know anything that, you know, but I'm just, I was even talking to Vern about it. As you take the two guys they're bringing in, you've got 11 returning guys, the two redshirt guys, that's 15 players. You don't have teams with 15 players on their roster, especially here at UBC, where minutes are so hard to come by. So it'll be something neat to follow.
It will be. Like we said, one of many plot lines to come, Daryl.
Thanks, Howard, for doing this. Talk to you soon.
Anytime, my friend.
All right. Well, we're going to take one last break here on Wiener's Barbecue. When we're back, we're going to talk to a member of our CITR Sports Department about this UBC Thunderbird 2009-10 season. He actually broadcasted their round one playoff game versus the University of Alberta. Jeff Sargent will be with us to wrap up the show. UBC, for the second year in a row, makes it to the national championship game. Second year in a row, they lose that game 91-81 to the Saskatchewan Huskies. How about them Huskies? Whatever. All right, everybody. 7 years. 7 times in 8 years, UBC has made it to this tournament. The final 8, final 10, it has been in that run, but no titles to show for it. 5 years in a row, their first 5 years knocked out in the first round. Last two make it to the championship game. They don't win either. And as I said, and Howard thinks it, Vern didn't deny it. I'm counting 2 years from now, UBC's in the NCAA, and tick tock, tick tock. All right, we'll be right back. Talk to you soon.
CITR is super popular. We've partnered with great local businesses to bring all our friends discounts in their communities. Say you like to kick it in kits. Show your friends of CITR card at Canterbury Tales Secondhand Books, Rufus's Guitar Shop, Prussian Music, The Eatery, Grindhouse Video, Fresh's Best Salsa & Co., Roy Shoes Limited, Vaz Boutique, Sage Natural Wellness, Gumdrops, Spank Shoes, Banyan Books, and the UBC Bike Kitchen, and save. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love. Well,
I'm troubled by shapeless fears. Who can live in the modern world without catching his share of them? I hope I've landed on my feet this time.
Need a place to rent? Have a place for rent? AMS Rents Line can help. AMS Rents Line is an easy-to-operate, touch-tone, and web-based system that connects thousands of landlords with UBC students looking for off-campus housing. UBC students can search the ads for free or place a two-week posting for $5. To view current listings, visit www.amsrentsline.com.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Winners Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio. With us on the line from, where are you again?
I'm in Terrace.
I knew it. I just didn't want to get it wrong. our CITR Sports Department, Jeff Sargent, who actually broadcasted UBC's Round 1 playoff victory over the Alberta Golden Bears, as I was partying in Whistler during the Olympics. So thank you for filling in for me there, Jeff.
Yes, you're welcome. We certainly made mention of your Olympic absence.
I was in Whistler.
What were you doing there anyway? Obviously with the Olympics.
Are you there?
I'm here. What did you watch?
No, I didn't. I watched on the Friday day, I watched probably 5 minutes of biathlon. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, we it was like a half hour bus ride to get there. 40 minute walk up the hill. And it turned, you know, we were an hour late. Turned out the event was an hour and 15 minutes. We went, watched some Norwegian guy get up gold, and then Austria and Russia sort of fought for the silver. Then we got the hell out of there and caught one of the first buses back. It was cold. It was cold. Other than that, no, we just had fun. We just, as I said, partied, I guess. As lame as that word sounds. No, I like the word, actually. Do you like the word party? Having fun, enjoying oneself.
Yeah, no, that's fine. All right.
Moving on, though, Jeffrey. Should we get on to something now?
Yeah, you're running out of time on your show.
I can go on like this, you know. I enjoy talking like this.
We've realized.
Jeff, UBC men's basketball team makes it to the national championship game 91-81. Clearly outplayed in that game by the Saskatchewan Huskies, who were worthy winners of not only this championship, the national championship, but also the Canada West championship, which they won here at UBC. You know, you hate to say it. I mean, you could say it was just Saskatchewan's day, but UBC didn't look good enough that day, did they?
No, they didn't. And, you know, I think we talked just after the game, and I think you put it best when you said Saskatchewan just out-toughed UBC. That's exactly what happened. UBC didn't look good. They got out to a good lead. I think it was a 12-4 lead halfway through the first quarter. And then they just completely fell apart. I don't know what happened there. Both teams were slow to the gate, and then Saskatchewan just seemed to get comfy, and UBC got really sloppy. And, you know, give credit to Saskatchewan. Obviously, they deserved the win, but UBC was just far too sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for UBC, and it's now happened to them 2 years in a row, in this championship game, it's hard to go down when you don't play your best. I mean, I think they played better in last year's championship game than they did in this one. Last year, I mean, Carleton was just such a good team. But this year, I mean, they didn't look right out there, did they? I mean, players did. Kamar Burke looked really good. I thought Alex Murphy played really well in that game off the bench, sort of steadying the point guard position during runs where UBC was getting back into it. But other than that, I don't think anybody really played that well as we're used to them playing. Melvin Mayotte had moments, actually, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like,
yeah, no, there was nobody that stepped up to the plate and made that difference, and that was the difference in the end. And Saskatchewan played well as a team. You talk about last year as well, and you know, going into the championship game, I mean, everything was looking to be in UBC's favor. I mean, the Saskatchewan massively upsetting Carleton. You know, UBC a chance for redemption against Saskatchewan from the Can West, and then it just all fell apart.
Yeah, and 7 times in 8 years, this team has been to this tournament. No national titles to show for it. Been to the championship game 2 years in a row. Of course, they opened that run with 5 straight losses in the first round, their first 5 appearances. I mean, I asked Vern this. It has to be weighing on you guys. He didn't get too into it, but, I mean, that's a pretty big run there on not getting it done at Nationals. 7 times in 8 years.
Well, I mean, you know, it certainly says something about the program to get there 7 of 8 years, but when you come away with nothing to show for it, I mean, certainly, I think for a lot of the players, they're probably thinking, you know, well, you know, we didn't go here to make it here. We came here to win. So what's the point? You go to win, and so, you know, that's certainly a disappointment, absolutely.
This program, Jeff, the other one I brought up to the guys is, obviously, it's going to be a fun story to follow here for the next few months. Pretty much after this show, it's time to turn our attention to Mr. NCAA conversation. My guess is, and you know, nobody's denied this to me, 2 years UBC will be in the NCAA. That's what I'm sort of thinking is going to happen. That means Kevin Hansen and this team, this great run they've had, they got 2 more years to get this thing done. So the clock is suddenly ticking for them to win a national title.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, like Howard just mentioned there, maybe the magical 40th anniversary run in 2 years. I like that. But obviously you can't plan for that, and you got to plan for now. And that's what Kevin Hansen's been doing for all this time, planning for now. But now never seems to be quite enough.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting. They're bringing in new recruits. But I'm interested. You know, you've got 11 returning players. You've got the two redshirt guys, and you have the 2 recruits. That's 15 players. That's too many people to have on a basketball team. I mean, it'll be something to follow. I suspect 1 or even 2 of the players currently on this team will not be back next year.
Well, just look at the math, and that very well could be. And you know, it's going to be sure going to be an interesting fight in training camp. So. Which is not that far off, really.
No.
But like Howard said, I'm looking forward to next.
There you go. Awesome. Jeff Sargent. Jeff, thank you for doing this. Any comment on the U.S. passing health care yesterday?
Sorry, what was that?
Any thoughts on the U.S. passing health care yesterday?
Interesting that it finally got done. Of course, there are still some roadblocks ahead, but, you know, certainly an historical achievement. And, you know, I get a real kick out of all the anti-healthcare people. It's quite entertaining to watch them. And
yeah.
I have a hard time figuring out where they're coming from.
Well, it's, you know what, I just figured I'd throw that one out there for whatever reason. But I will say, you know, I have Crohn's disease, and I do have to get some very expensive drugs at times. And, you know, I just find it so offensive when people are anti-public healthcare. That's me. I know this is a sport.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I can't, without the drugs, you know, who's to say that, I'm not, you know, people have it obviously a lot worse than I do, and without the drugs, these people can't even work, you see, so.
Exactly.
You do give them the drugs, and now they can go work, so. I don't know. Anyways, mazel tov to the U.S. for getting it done. For the Democrats, actually.
Yeah.
For getting that done. Well, I don't know why. I just, you know what, Jeff? I just had to say that today.
No, well, it's you're on the air. You have your chance.
That's why I did it. Awesome, Jeff Sargent. Right. Jeff, anything else we got going on? See, we're doing baseball broadcasts again.
Baseball, yes, coming up next weekend. Some more games over the Easter long weekend on the Friday and Saturday. And I believe I will be in town to be taking part in those as well. So looking forward to some more baseball.
Awesome. Jeff, thanks for doing this today. Hello? I guess he's gone. All right. That's it. I'm done. Mike with Flexure Head is coming on right after me. Yeah, I guess that's it. Okay. How are you, Mike? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fine, thank you. Ah, we're gonna do this. Okay, we're just gonna finish like this. This'll lead into your rocker show.
Excellent.
All right. I'd like to thank all my guests for the show today, of course. Kyle Watson, UBC men's basketball team, Verdant Power, some more. Jeff Sartre.